Case is submitted. We'll hear arguments next in GTE Sylvania against Consumers Union. Well, as soon as we have our troops assembled, we'll proceed. We have six. Mr. Snyderman, you may proceed when you're ready.
Mr. Chief Justice, if the court please. We are here for a second time on a petition for certiorari from the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. And for the second time, that court has placed its district court on a collision course with the District Court for Delaware and with the Third Circuit. The petitioners here are 12 television manufacturers which furnished information to the Consumer Product Safety Commission with respect to television-related accidents. The respondents are prominent consumer groups who have sought access to that data. In early 75, the Commission notified all interested parties that it was prepared to release the data. And shortly thereafter, the 12 manufacturers brought suit in four district courts. Most of the suits were brought in the Delaware District Court. The balance were brought in other district courts, not in the District of Columbia. Temporary restraining orders were promptly obtained, and the non-Delaware cases were transferred to Delaware with consent. In May 75, about 2 weeks after the manufacturers filed their suits, the requesters brought a suit in the District of Columbia against the Consumer Product Safety Commission and joined the manufacturers as defendants. The District of Columbia suit was fairly promptly dismissed by Judge Ritchie in September of 75. He found a lack of a case of controversy between the requesters and the agency because the agency stood quite willing to release the documents when not enjoined from doing so. And he found a failure to state a claim upon which relief could be granted as against the manufacturers because no documents were being sought from the manufacturers. In October 75, Chief Judge Latcham entered a preliminary injunction in the Delaware case.
Mr. Schneider, since so much of this case seems to depend on procedural history and so forth, was the theory of your case in Delaware solely a reverse FOIA case, or was it partly a Chrysler-type case that there was some protection given to providers that couldn't be furnished regardless of whether an agency wanted to or not?
Well, it was really I guess in view of Chrysler, it is clear that a reverse FOI case is really there is no such thing. It's a very convenient shorthand way of describing the Chrysler kind of suit, and that's what basically we have and basically what the Third Circuit ultimately found that we had. In any event, Judge Latcham found that Section 6B1 of the Consumer Product Safety Act barred disclosure of the requested data, and he entered a preliminary injunction. Now, Judge Ritchie had explicitly noted that, in his opinion, it would be appropriate for the requesters to seek to intervene in Delaware, but they did not do so. Instead, they appealed, as they had a right to do, to the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia. And in July of 77, approximately 10 months after oral argument, the Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia reversed the decision below and directed the case to proceed on the merits, in spite of the Delaware preliminary injunction. This court granted certiorari, summarily vacated the judgment below, and it remanded the case for reconsideration by the court below, because by that time there had been a permanent injunction which had been entered by the Delaware court. The Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia reconsidered the matter and ultimately reaffirmed its decision, and hence we are here. In April of 79, the Third Circuit affirmed Judge Latchin's decision on the permanent injunction. Now, in that proceeding, the respondents, in this case, appeared as amici curiae on a procedural issue. And the Consumer Federation of America, of which at least one requester is a member, appeared as an amicus on the merits. The Delaware case thus is final, except for a pending petition for certiorari filed by the agency in this court. Now, the court below in this case first found that there was a case or controversy with respect to the effect of the then preliminary and final judgment, the injunction. It second failed to discuss the argument that had been made by both the agency and by us that there had not been an improper withholding of the documents within the meaning of the Freedom of Information Act, because the agency was willing to produce the documents but was enjoined from doing so. And third, it concluded that neither principles of comity nor collateral estoppel preclude the District of Columbia from going forward. And indeed, in its second opinion, the District of Columbia Court advised and directed the trial court to consider whether it may enjoin the manufacturers from enforcing the injunction in Delaware in the event the injunction were disobeyed. And it also commented on class action opportunities for joining all requesters, a technique which had been espoused by neither side, and to this day is not espoused by either side. We rely on three wholly independent arguments for urging reversal to this court. The first ground is quite simple, and it is this. The Freedom of Information Act in Section 552A4B provides a requester with access to a district court which is given jurisdiction, in the words of the statute, to order the production of any agency records, and here are the key words, improperly withheld. We have here a permanent injunction which bars disclosure of the records which the agency would willingly produce. It is a sufficient basis for this court to dispose of this case in its entirety, simply to rule that the documents are not improperly withheld in these circumstances when the agency is permanently or indeed temporarily enjoined from producing them. The injunction must obviously be obeyed unless or until it is vacated.
We would have to say, I suppose, that the requesters had a right to intervene in the Delaware action and to appeal the injunction against disclosure.
I would suppose they would have had such a right, and they still may have such a right. That is something that this court would have to decide as to whether they have waived those that right or not.
I mean, if we were to lay down a general
of course, legal problem. Of course, they certainly, and they were, they had every opportunity to do so at all levels, as I will point out. Now, the entire orientation of this act, and I am talking about the Freedom of Information Act now, is to restrict unbridled administrative decisions. No one before has ever suggested that the agency is required to defy court orders. The Act is directed at agency conduct. It is not directed at courts. It is not directed at court restraining orders, blocking record production. In Chrysler, this court recognized that a submitter of documents has a right to sue to restrain production of those documents. Now, if a suit is authorized, it obviously has a prospect of success. And this means the prospect that there will be a restraint on the agency. And such a court restraint on an agency cannot be translated into an improper agency withholding. There are ways of vacating or modifying a decree, but only the issuing court can do so. Never a moment in time has there been since this case in the District of Columbia has been instituted when the agency was not under temporary or permanent restraint from producing those documents.
By virtue of
temporary restraining order in the Delaware court, by virtue of a temporary injunction, and by virtue of a permanent injunction, all in another court. And
just to be sure, you have told us that the respondents could have intervened at any time and taken part or sought to intervene at any time, and then, if allowed, take part in that proceeding and have a direct attack on the injunction
yes.
by way of appellate review.
And, Mr. Chief Justice, it is very common in the reverse situation. There are many cases on the books where an agency has refused to produce documents. And a requester has brought suit in some court where the submitter has intervened to help bolster the position of the government and make whatever arguments it thought was appropriate. That has been very common. The requesters would have this court consider this case as if there had never been any restraining order in effect, but that is not our case. And it is equally significant, I submit, that the requesters in their brief never take a position whatsoever as to what ought to be done with this case now that there is a permanent injunction in place. And yet, that is our case.
Well, under your position, you would almost have to take the opposite position. If they had first filed an action under the Freedom of Information Act before your clients had filed an action for an injunction against disclosure, wouldn't you, if you rely on comedy?
I would suppose that would be true, and I would suppose we would have intervened. But in all candor, when the decision is that the agency will release the documents, it's usually going to be the submitter of the documents that will bring the suit first. And when the decision is not to release the documents, it will be the requester that will bring the suit first.
Because the agencies have set up internal procedures whereby they notify in advance, don't they? At least that was true in Chrysler, that the Secretary of Defense notified Chrysler 10 days in advance that he was
yes.
going to release them in case Chrysler wanted to do anything about it.
Of course. And because a party who is going to get what he asked for really has no cause of action. That comes to a separate point as to whether there is a case of controversy. He has no basis for suing if the agency says, I'm going to give you these documents tomorrow. So we come to the second ground, the second quite independent ground, and that is comedy. We submit that sound principles of judicial administration really require that deference be given to a sister court which has first seized hold of a lawsuit as and is in the process of adjudicating it. Unfortunately, we witness here an almost deliberate effort to cause a collision. It's very unfortunate, but I must say, to cause duplicative litigation because I think the Court of Appeals preferred its own court. And yet it is, as I've said, quite natural for the plaintiff to select its jurisdiction. The suggestion has been made that comity principles apply, this is the suggestion of the court below, only when all the parties in the second suit are parties to the first. But there is no such rule. And we certainly urge this court not to construct such a rule when there is, Justice Rehnquist, an opportunity to intervene. In the Delaware District Court, if there is a feeling that the government will not be an adequate representative. Or the respondents could have intervened here in the Third Circuit. And when they moved to appear as amici on a procedural issue, we opposed their appearing on that basis and said in our same paper that we would have no objection, even at that late date, if they were to intervene at the Third Circuit level. So certainly, where we do not have a recalcitrant agency in this case, we do not think that the Freedom of Information Act provides a basis for relief. What we do have here is that the manufacturers have a strong statutory basis in 1391E for bringing a suit in a locality where it resides, a very strong government policy dating back to 1962, and with a potential of 200 million requesters who might request a document at any particular moment, we believe that comity should indicate that litigation in this area ought to be focused in a single forum. Now, my final ground, case or controversy, to which I would only like to devote a few minutes so I may save a little time for rebuttal. Judge Ritchie found that since the requesters and the government both desired the same result, release of the documents, there was no case or controversy as to them. No court, not even the court below here, has held that the joinder of the manufacturers under Rule 19 provides an independent basis for jurisdiction. We are a mere appendage, and our being added as an appendage could not translate a non-controversy into a controversy. Thank you, sir. I'll reserve the rest of my time.
Mr. Geller.
Mr. Geller, did the Court of Appeals reject the argument that the district court suit in the District of Columbia should just be dismissed because there just isn't any wrongful withholding?
The interesting thing about the D.C. Circuit's decision, Mr. Justice White, is they never addressed that question.
And it was presented, though, wasn't it?
It was.
But it was. I don't see anything in the opinion about it.
That's an interesting point.
Mr. Geller, is that true as to both of the opinions of the D.C. Circuit?
Yes,
it was
I believe
presented
it.
Both times, I mean.
Yes, I believe it. Yes, I believe that's right. Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the Court, the federal respondents in this case are in basic agreement with the petitioners that the D.C. Circuit erred in ordering the District of Columbia District Court to adjudicate essentially the same controversy with the same documents and the same legal issues as that involved in the already pending Delaware litigation. The principal concern of the federal government in this area, however, is not to urge this court to adopt rules, procedural rules, that favor FOIA requesters or submitters, but rather to urge the court to adopt procedural rules to ensure that federal agencies are not put in a position where they're subject to inconsistent and perhaps even irreconcilable injunctive orders of different federal courts, with one court requiring the agency to turn over to the public certain records whose disclosure another court has enjoined. Now, this problem is unlikely to arise when the first suit brought is an action by a requester under the FOIA. In those circumstances, as Mr. Justice Rehnquist has mentioned, the practice has generally been for the agency to notify the submitter of the pendency of the FOIA request or of a legal action if one has been filed, and to give it the opportunity to intervene if it believes that its interests are not adequately protected by the agency. The more significant problem, however, which is clearly illustrated by this case, occurs when the first suit brought is a so-called reverse FOIA action by a submitter of information to the government, and when the submitter obtains an injunction prohibiting the agency from disclosing the records in question. The federal government's view is that a second district court in a suit subsequently brought by an FOIA requester should not proceed to adjudicate the disclosability of the very same documents that are the subject of the first suit.
Yeah, Mr. Geller, do you think there are going to be any more reverse FOIA actions?
Well, we use the phrase...
After Chrysler, which said there was no such thing?
I understand that the FOIA itself doesn't give any rights to submitters, but we use the phrase reverse FOIA action
in
here.
In a broader...
Yes, just as a shorthand, as Mr. Schneiderman...
Chrysler action.
I'd be happy to call them Chrysler actions, if that would please the court.
Except that may be outgrown recently.
Perhaps I'll continue to call them reverse FOIA action.
Don't necessarily tie your wagon to that star.
What you mean is an action based on some statute which forbids an agency to whom information has been furnished by a private person from disclosing it to someone else.
That's right. And here there are allegations that the Trade Secrets Act and Section 6B1 of the Consumer Product Safety Act prohibited the agency from disclosing the television accident reports. Now, the first and most obvious reason why we think that the D.C. Circuit should not have ordered the district court to continue to adjudicate this case is one that Mr. Schneiderman has already touched on, but I want to emphasize it because of its obvious importance to this case, and that's the very language of the FOIA itself. Section 552A4B empowers a district court to order the disclosure of agency records that are being, quote, improperly withheld under the FOIA. And we agree with the petitioners that an agency's obedience to a federal court order can in no sense be regarded as improper. The Consumer Product Safety Commission believes that the injunctive order that was issued in Delaware is based on an erroneous interpretation of the law. And it's appealed that injunction to the Third Circuit, and it's now filed a certiorari petition in this court. But the Commission is bound to obey the injunction until and unless it's set aside. We simply don't understand, and the D.C. Circuit, as I said a moment ago, didn't bother to explain how the agency could have, quote, improperly withheld television accident reports from the requesters when it refused to turn over those documents solely because of the outstanding Delaware injunction. The requesters never address this issue in their brief, and they never explain what the Commission is supposed to do if it's subjected to inconsistent injunctions. Now, along with the petitioners, the government also believes that the D.C. Circuit's decision is wrong for yet another somewhat broader reason, and that is that it violates fundamental principles of judicial comity. The Court has often applied the general rule that a federal court should refrain from duplicating or interfering with the procedures...
That is a pretty general ground. I wondered why you didn't petition independently here, did you?
We did not. We filed a brief at the petition stage, and that's why we appear here.
But you didn't file...
No, but it was not because we did not believe that the D.C. Circuit's decision was wrong, and we said precisely that we thought it was.
You do concede that there are 11 courts of appeals in the country.
I do concede that there are 11. But...
Soon to be 15.
We think that in the FOIA area, there's a strong analogy to be drawn to cases involving in rem or quasi-in rem jurisdiction. In such cases, this court has made clear that the second court in which an action is filed must always defer to the court first asserting jurisdiction, not as a matter of discretion, but as a matter of absolute necessity. So the Court of Appeals in this case itself recognized actions seeking to require or to prohibit the disclosure of copies of specific documents are in many ways indistinguishable from actions seeking the particular disposition of a specific piece of property. In both types of cases, exclusive control over the property is essential to effectuate a court's judgment. It's obvious that an injunction preventing release of certain information is absolutely useless unless it prevents agency action everywhere. And by the same token, an order requiring disclosure of information obviously can't be limited to a single jurisdiction and would forever foreclose a subsequent non-disclosure order from ever being effective. In short, FOIA claims, or reverse FOIA claims, when they concern the same agency records, we believe must be adjudicated in one and not multiple jurisdictions. And we believe that it makes the most sense from the standpoint of judicial administration to centralize that litigation in the first court to assume jurisdiction, subject, of course, to that court's further order transferring the case to some other district. Now, the Court of Appeals candidly acknowledged that its decision would require duplicative litigation, but it felt that that result was justified in this case for a number of reasons.
It was on the competitive theory that competition is good for the judiciary as it is for business?
That was the reason that they did not offer, but they offered several others which we think are equally meritless. We've discussed them in our brief. The only point I want to make about the D.C. Circuit's approach, its so-called creative approach or flexible approach, as the requesters call it, is that it totally fails to offer a satisfactory solution to what we believe is the most pressing problem in this area, which is the very real possibility that a federal agency may be subject to conflicting injunctive orders of two separate courts. And the procedural devices, what the D.C. Circuit said is we're not going to require that the litigation be centralized in the first court. It can proceed wherever the FOIA action is filed, despite the pendency of another case. And there are a number of procedural devices that could be used to try to consolidate the litigations. But the problem with that approach is that the procedural devices that the Court of Appeals would rely on, such as Section 1404A of Title 28, Rule 19 of the Federal Rules of Civil Procedure, while they may be useful in some cases to accomplish a consolidation, clearly can't be used in every case, and then you're left with the specter of possibly conflicting, inconsistent injunctions. For example, Section 1404 only allows transfer to a district in which the case could originally have been brought. And Rule 19 often can't be used to bring a non-party into a lawsuit because of venue or service of process problems. And perhaps more important, the principal defect in the D.C. Circuit's approach is that it relies heavily on procedural devices that we submit are simply ill-suited to FOIA litigation, where a plaintiff need not have any legal basis or any legal interest in the documents that he requests. For example, the Court of Appeals' suggestion that FOIA submitters or federal agencies should make use of a so-called requester class action. It's totally unworkable in practice because every person in the United States, indeed I suppose every person in the world, is a member of the class. Anybody can make a request under the FOIA. And I might add it's significant, we think, as Mr. Schneiderman said, that the requesters in this case have abandoned any reliance on that portion of the Court of Appeals' opinion in this court. Moreover, if in fact the Commission had attempted to join these requesters in the Delaware litigation under Rule 19, as the D.C. Circuit later said they should have attempted, the tactic would have been of little practical value in avoiding duplicative litigation or inconsistent judgments, because even if the Commission could have succeeded in joining the requesters, and the answer to that question is far from clear in light of the venue and service of process problems that I mentioned a moment ago, all that would have been accomplished is that these two particular requesters would have been bound by the collateral estoppel effect of the Delaware judgment. However, anyone in the United States would still have been free to file an FOIA action in the District of Columbia, excuse me, seeking access to the very same documents. And under the D.C. Circuit's theory, since these new requesters would not have been parties to or bound by the Delaware litigation, they would have had a right to continue to litigate and to receive an adjudication of their FOIA claim in the District of Columbia despite the existence of the Delaware injunction. So we think that this so-called flexible approach just won't work in a substantial number of cases and could lead to what we believe is the most important problem in this area, one that the Court, I think, should be concerned about in resolving the issue, which is the very real possibility that exists in this case and in these types of cases of an agency having to either comply with an order requiring or an order prohibiting disclosure of precisely the same document on pain of contempt.
You can't really interplead information, can you?
Well, it's been suggested, but there's certainly no case that, the requesters and Judge Robinson in the D.C. Circuit, in an effort to explain what they meant by a creative approach, listed every conceivable procedural remedy that might exist in this area, but there's no cases that have ever applied it, and we don't think it would be workable.
Well, what is the government's position that the court handling the second suit, the later suit, should hold its hand from the very outset, or do you say that comedy picks up when there's been a judgment in one court or the other?
Well, we think that the second court, in this case the D.C. Circuit District Court, could have stayed its action.
I know it could have stayed its action. What is your position? When should have it stayed it? From the very outset?
Yes.
Or would it have been error to go ahead until there's been a judgment?
Yes, it would have been error.
It would have been error to go ahead even though predictably let's assume the District of Columbia District Court thought that it could, the docket in this court is much freer, much quicker than the court in Delaware. Couldn't they have proceeded to judgment first?
I don't think so. First of all, there's, of course, the improperly withheld argument which exists in that situation. By the time the second district court case was filed, the commission was already under an injunction not to disclose the documents. So that's reason one why the D.C. district court should not have continued to adjudicate the case. But secondly,
well,
I suppose
whether a permanent injunction ought to issue.
Under Walker against Birmingham, it's not being improperly withheld, even though the injunction is erroneous, because the remedy is to appeal
precisely,
the injunction.
Precisely, and that's what the commission did here. It appealed that injunction to the Third Circuit, which is affirmed, and it's filed a certiorari petition in this court. But until that injunction is set aside, I don't see how.
So you feel you must interpose that the injunction to answer my question. Suppose no temporary restraining order, preliminary injunction.
Assuming that no temporary restraining order had been entered in the Delaware case,
yes,
in this court, then we wouldn't have our first argument, which is the improperly withheld
until
argument.
Until one court or the other had come to judgment.
No, we think that the principles of comedy would apply here even if the first court had not come to judgment, because I think that the analogy to the in rem or quasi in rem, but unless you apply a bright line test saying,
I guess we don't need to settle that because there is a judgment.
Absolutely. You don't have to reach what I've stated as our broader theory, because we do think
I don't see how that case could arise, because if there's no injunction, presumably if Mr. Schneiderman's argument is correct anyway, you would have simply turned the documents over, notwithstanding the pendency of the Delaware action.
Well, we said that we would have turned the documents. As I recall, we said in late March or early April 1975 that we were planning to turn the documents over on May the 1st.
And if there had been no injunction before May 1st, should we not assume that you would have done what you said you were going to
do? Yes, but
presumably the hypothetical couldn't arise.
Well, it could arise in a situation where on April 10th, the submitters ran into the Delaware District Court and asked for a temporary restraining order, which I think it's unlikely. You're right, the Delaware District Court might have refused. The case could then have been litigated, could have gone to judgment in the very short period of time between.
But Mr. Justice White's question was, assuming just a pending case and no order. And my understanding of the government's position all along has been, if there were no order, we would have turned the documents
over. Well, that's absolutely right.
You would have been obliged to turn it over, would you not?
Well, the commission has taken the position that it's not exempt, and we would have turned it over. That's correct.
Mr. Geller, do you think there's a case or controversy here?
Yes, we do. We've addressed that very briefly in our footnote. We think that there is a live controversy between the requesters and the commission as to whether these documents are being improperly withheld.
By virtue of the joinder under Rule 19?
No. There is a case of controversy between the requesters and the commission here in the District of Columbia as to whether the documents that the requesters have asked for are being improperly withheld under the Act.
So the Court of Appeals should have done what?
The D.C. Court of Appeals, we think that they should have reversed on the ground that the documents were not being improperly withheld and the requesters had not stated a cause of action under the FOIA.
Affirmed.
Judge Ritchie had affirmed, but although on a different theory.
If you think
theory.
The Court of Appeals was correct to decide the case on the merits, but simply that it
that's
decided
right. We think there is
way.
A case of controversy.
Well, would it have been all right for him to say, just say we're going to wait?
Well, I don't think
I mean,
there would have been.
What about comedy? What's the bottom line on the comedy argument?
The bottom line is that we think that the.
It isn't to dismiss.
Well,
it's
it could be
wait
in a case
to
like
see
this.
If the other, see if the other case really stands up.
That's right. That's a possibility. We say that Judge Ritchie
could have. Possibility. What else would you do?
Well, We don't think there's any practical difference between Judge Ritchie having said, I'm going to stay my order, because if a permanent injunction was issued in Delaware and never overturned, that stay would have been of indefinite duration.
Well, I agree with you, but what if it was overturned?
If it was overturned, then it's conceivable, Judge, that these requesters could have just asked for the documents at that point. They wouldn't have needed a lawsuit.
If you affirm the district court, it's a dismissal.
That's right.
Well, that isn't what you would do. That isn't the bottom line on a comedy case. You would just
no. I think that the cases in this court have said that under rules of comedy, a case can be dismissed. It need not be stayed. The court has to decide what's the appropriate remedy under the particular circumstances of the case. Thank you.
Very well, Mr. Morrison.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Virtually from the start of this litigation, the petitioners and the government have opposed the efforts of the requesting parties under the Freedom of Information Act to litigate this case in the District of Columbia. They have consistently asked, why didn't you go to Delaware? And I want to answer that question today in three separate ways. We didn't go to Delaware for three reasons. First, we didn't want to go to Delaware. Second, we didn't have to go to Delaware. And third, it's the wrong question to ask. And the proper question to ask is, why didn't the parties, and in particular the government, move to take the cases in Delaware and bring them down to the District of Columbia, where everybody could have was here, the case could have gone forward to judgment on the merits in one court, this one. Now, bluntly stated, this case involves forum shopping by all the parties. There is nothing inherently evil in forum shopping. Congress has provided alternate venue provisions, and they're there to be exercised. The manufacturers went to Delaware because they believed it would be favorable to them to go to Delaware. It is not, of course, the principal place of business of any of them. In fact, four of the lawsuits were not even filed in Delaware. They were filed elsewhere and later transferred to Delaware.
Isn't that usually a reason for venuing a case, though, counsel?
Absolutely right, Your Honor. And my point is that by saying this is a forum shopping case, we don't decide anything. The manufacturers were there in Delaware despite the absence of any witnesses, despite the absence of lead counsel. The documents weren't there. They were merely incorporated in Delaware. We wanted to avoid Delaware for our own reasons, because we believed it was inconvenient and because it was more costly to litigate here in the District of Columbia. The clients were here. The counsel was here. We considered going up to Delaware and moving to intervene in Delaware and attempting to have the case transferred here under 1404A. But as soon as we thought about that, we saw we were in a box, because there are cases that have held that if you voluntarily come into an action as an intervener, you waive your right to go to ask the case be transferred. So we were put in a bind, because they had won the race to the courthouse. Indeed, we couldn't have gone to Delaware only at the time of filing. We would have had to go on to the District of Delaware, the Western District of Pennsylvania, and we would have had to go on to the Western District of New York and the Southern District of New York to litigate a single controversy. Now, we also perceive that the action in the District of Columbia would be more favorably disposed of here. The manufacturers thought the contrary, for they went to Delaware, and the general reputation of the courts is at least a matter that counsel believe that they ought to consider in their obligation to their clients. Moreover, there had been temporary restraining orders already entered in these other cases, and it was a negative footing on which to start off the cases. The result is that we would have been faced with a situation at the time we filed the complaint, and I want to emphasize this was 4 days after the May 1st self-imposed deadline by the Court of Appeals, by the Product Safety Commission. 4 days after that, we did the simplest thing. We filed one case here in the District of Columbia, and unlike the manufacturers, we named every single person who was relevant in the controversy, tried to get them all in a single forum. So that's why we didn't want to go to Delaware. And as a counsel, I must tell you that I'm obligated to represent my clients to the best I can.
Mr. Morrison, I trust before you're through, you'll explain to you your views about the improperly withheld argument.
Why don't I do that now, Justice Stevens? Let me say first, that argument was barely made at all in the Court of Appeals. Barely. It was,
I understand. You must have, apparently you recognized it.
Mr. Justice White, I'm saying that it was barely made because I can't say to you now that it wasn't made. I don't have any recollection of it, but I just want to say I'm only saying that from the point of view of the Court of Appeals. The issue is here, and I'm prepared to answer it on the merits. But I did think it's fair that the Court of Appeals, that was not a principal focus. It was certainly not an issue made at the district.
Was there a petition for rehearing for this last?
No, there was not, Your Honor.
Thanks.
There was the first time,
yes,
but not the second time.
Where was it barely raised, this time or the time before, or both?
I think only the time before. The remand, Your Honor, was in connection with the fact that the permanent injunction.
Well, that's what this argument's about, isn't it?
Yes, Your Honor.
That's what this whole point is, the existence of an injunction.
That's right. Now, we admit that there is now a permanent.
If they had disobeyed that injunction, what could have been the consequence?
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
If they had disobeyed that injunction, what could have been the consequence?
We had never suggested the Product Safety Commission disobey that injunction.
No.
We believe that they should not have disobeyed an injunction under Walker against Birmingham. What we believe would happen is if this case had properly been.
But I understood you to suggest that the agency should disobey that injunction.
No, Your Honor, I did not suggest that. What I suggested would happen is if all of the parties were here in the District of Columbia, as part of an ancillary relief on the merits, the court here in the District of Columbia would have power analogous to the comity power to stay another action, to order the petitioners here to seek to withdraw the injunction in Delaware, to clean up, to be sure that there's no outstanding injunction.
Is there a case from this court ever on holding to that effect?
No, Your Honor. I must say this case is unique in a number of different ways because it seeks to apply principles of collateral estoppel when we weren't a party. It seeks to apply comity based on a temporary restraining order, which the petitioners not only say.
Mr. Morrison, don't forget to answer my question about improper withholding.
I'm trying.
I know you're trying. That's really terribly important.
I know it is, Your Honor. And
I think regardless of how it got here, the equities or all the rest of it, we really have to address that.
There is now a final injunction. Affirmed on appeal, petition for certiorari pending. But the origin of the withholding argument, the improper withholding argument, the linchpin was the grant of the initial temporary restraining orders in the 13 different cases that were initially filed. Now, according to this argument, if you cannot stop, if you have no jurisdiction, it's because there was no improper withholding from the moment that the temporary restraining order, Mr. Justice White, was entered in those cases. And so we could not have, from the very start, had jurisdiction.
Well,
and
I didn't realize this is a jurisdictional argument. I thought it was just you just lose on the merits.
Well,
the court adjudicates your case that you file and say you lose. There isn't any improper withholding.
But as soon as the argument is made that as soon as the temporary restraining order is entered, there can no longer the basis of withholding is no longer that there is a statutory right to withhold, but that there's a temporary restraining order. That's the argument that was made the first time, and every time it's been made,
What's wrong with the argument? That's what I'm trying to figure out.
Right.
At any time during this case, were they wrongfully withholding documents?
Right. There are two things that are wrong with that argument. The first is that presumably, if we had won the race to the courthouse,
but you didn't,
and filed a case, and they had gotten a temporary restraining order someplace else, in another case without us being a party, at that point our case would have to be dismissed under this argument. And I don't think that Congress ever intended this statute, which was a broad remedial statute, give the rights to requesting parties to come in, ever intended it to be so narrowly construed, and I think this Court's decision in the Bannercraft case suggests that the FOIA did not strip a court of its equity powers.
If the agency says I'm withholding the documents because I've been ordered to, I'll be held in contempt if I don't, they nevertheless are wrongfully withholding.
That is correct, Your Honor. That is correct.
What's your second reason?
I thought, Your Honor, the first was that it was simply not a way of dealing with it. Mm-hmm. That it might be the case, if we had a situation in which the manufacturers had gone in and requested and brought an action, gotten a temporary restraining order, gotten a preliminary injunction, a permanent injunction in the district court, affirmed on appeal, 2 years later we came in, at that point we might have a case in which not that we would be precluded from proceeding at all, but that we might have to go back to the original forum.
Well, you're saying that FOIA is so broad that in Congress didn't intend to strip a court of its equitable powers, and yet I understood a moment ago that you agreed that under Walker against Birmingham, the only way to challenge an injunction was to appeal it, not to disobey it. Are you saying that applies only to an injunction issued only 4 days ago?
No, Your Honor, that's not what I meant. What I meant was you would have to bring a legal proceeding of some kind. I did not mean appeal in the traditional sense of appeal. And I would consider within Walker, you resort to judicial process, which is what Walker was talking about. And the judicial process here that you would be resorting to is bringing in the manufacturers, the submitters, and the Product Safety Commission, and the requesters in one forum.
And disagreeing with the other forum.
Well, Your Honor, I think that we would have to, the case would have to be transferred. It should have been transferred there. We should have been joined up there to begin with. I would have had no problem if they transferred the case down here from Delaware and we would have relitigated it here. But nobody tried to do that up there. And if we went up there and tried to do it, we were likely to get our heads chopped off.
Mr. Myers, if you say yourself, relitigate, didn't you? Re-litigate.
If I said it, I didn't mean it in that sense.
Was that fraud you moving in on you?
I don't know.
That's what you're trying to do, aren't you? Re-litigate.
No, we're trying our first chance to litigate. Well, we have never litigated that.
Then what would happen to the Third Circuit case that's on appeal here on cert here?
Yes.
What would happen to that case?
Well, we believe that we should have been joined as indispensable parties.
What would happen to that case? Could the D.C. Court of Appeals reverse us?
No, Your Honor, they could not.
They can't even there's no procedures for transferring a case from one Court of Appeals to another, is there?
At that point, no. The Third Circuit could have...
That's the point where we are now, is there's a Court of Appeals judgment, and cert is pending here.
If this Court grants certiorari, in our view, and decides the case, if it decides it and affirms the decision below, we would not be legally bound by the outcome because we were not parties to the Delaware proceeding. Now, as a matter of stare decisis, of course, I would advise my clients the likelihood of success is very small.
Yeah, but how about as far as the fact that the agency would not be violating FOIA because it is not wrongfully withholding? The injunction has been affirmed.
I would say at that point, Your Honor, if we had brought a lawsuit after this court affirmed the decision, I might have to go to Delaware to open the proceeding there, as both sides admit
maybe,
that I can
but
do.
But meanwhile, the agency would not be wrongfully withholding.
But I could presumably, if I had to join the agency up in Delaware, if their argument is right that it's pursuant only to a court order, it's the court order at that point that would preclude me from proceeding on the merits. And I don't see how, if it's wrongfully withholding now, I could ever relitigate it. But it seems to me that the problem with what the government has suggested here is that they have made everything turn on a race to the courthouse, which under these circumstances we could not win. And we couldn't win.
Well, no, Mr. Morrison, they also had to get the injunction. They could have got to the courthouse first, but...
They consented to it in most cases, and everybody has agreed that it's virtually automatic. In this kind of litigation, if you don't give the submitters an injunction, the case is over. And every government case that I have seen, the government has consented.
That isn't true of that permanent injunction. That's after litigation.
No, but we were tossed out, and the argument on improper withholding was made at both the temporary restraining and the preliminary injunction stage. And that's when we lost our case in the District of Columbia, District Court initially, because we were told we couldn't proceed. And what I'm trying to say is that the government here and the petitioners are making everything turn on a race to the courthouse, a race which we couldn't win for one reason, because we let the administrative process take its course. And as sure as I'm standing here today, I want to assure you, this will be the last case we will lose on a race to the courthouse. Because next time we're going to be smart, and we're going to be here in the District of Columbia, and anyone who wants to come in is going to have to come in.
Why should we rule on this case if you guys all settled?
We have it, Your Honor. Because I don't think that's a sensible way for this court or other courts to resolve these controversies.
Well, what if the district court in which you apply your new tactics, if you lose this case, says the agency says it's going to give you the records, you say you want them? What are you arguing about? You don't have a case.
But we will get in there before they decide, because that most of them don't make it in the 10 and 20 days that the statute specifically authorizes us to do.
What about the ones which do?
Do you take the position that a wrongful withholding occurs when an agency says we need time to evaluate
the
request?
Yes, Your Honor. The statute, I believe, is clear on that.
It's a wrongful withholding unless they send you the documents by return mail?
No, within the 10 days plus the extensions.
Congress dealt with this in the 1974 yes. amendments, was concerned about this very problem, and said, we recognize the interruption of administrative process is not a good thing in general, but we also realize that the agencies keep saying, just wait another couple days, a couple days, a couple days, and you don't get it. Congress said, yes, the courts have jurisdiction if the statutory time frames have passed. So
what if those statutory time frames have not passed?
Your Honor, those are not going to be very many of those cases.
Well, but what about the few of them that there are?
At that point, Your Honor, I think what would happen is, and what we've urged, is that the government is in the middle of all of these cases. It is the responsibility of the government, who claims to be a stakeholder here and have no other interest besides doing that, to say we've got to try to do what we can, either join the parties under Rule 19, which we say they should have done here when we are known requesters, not a hypothetical 200 million, but known requesters who have been asking for these documents, or move to transfer under 1404A, which, incidentally, the government finally got around to doing after the first decision in the D.C. Circuit. Of course, at that time, it was denied as untimely. Moreover, the government didn't have all the cases in Delaware to begin with. There were four cases which they moved from other districts to Delaware instead of moving them all down to the District of Columbia. And we say that's a more sensible way, that neither requesters nor submitters ought to have the option of unilaterally choosing the forum and having the other person go up to have to intervene and then lose their right to move to transfer. That's not a sensible way of deciding in which forum these cases ought to be litigated. The government seems to...
Why prefer the forum in which the government agency is located to the forum in which either the submitter or the requester is located?
I am not suggesting that you have to do that, Mr. Justice Rehnquist. All I'm suggesting that you should do is to look at the facts of a particular case and see where the appropriate forum for litigation is. Here, it would plainly have been in the District of Columbia. The principal counsel for the submitters were here. The agency was here. The records were here. The principal counsel for the requesters were here, and the requesters themselves were here. But in the next case, if someone requested the records of somebody living in Alaska, and it was requested by a corporation down in Florida, to say that the one party or the other should automatically, without any consideration of fairness, be able to drag that person to an unfriendly forum doesn't seem to me to be a sensible way to do things.
But then you agree to Alaska. Why don't you go to Hawaii while you're at it?
Well, you can do that, Your Honor.
Then you're going to create a whole new branch of law depending on case-by-case situations as to
just
what...
Just as we resolve other issues where there are two parties filing lawsuits in the patent area. Happens all the time. The difference in the patent area is that the race isn't fixed. Because here, if the government decides to release the documents, the requesters no longer can be in the race. There's no case or controversy. We admit that without the bringing in of another party. But once the government says that they're not going to turn the documents over, then the submitters can't win the race. Because by definition, they don't have a dispute. Indeed, they don't have a dispute with the agency until the agency affirmatively decides to release the documents. So whatever the sense of applying the race to the courthouse notion may be in other contexts, it doesn't make sense here. It won't work. We need other procedural devices, Rule 19 and 1404A, in order to be able to consolidate the cases in a single forum. Now, in addition to the problems created by the race to the courthouse, we are going to have situations here. It is purely fortuitous that we were able to consolidate all of the cases brought by the submitters in Delaware. And that's only because of the fact that all the corporations were there. In the absence of that, we would have had litigation around the country. If
couldn't
the submitters
reverse be true, Mr. Morrison? You could have multiple requesters all over the country
yes.
and maybe not be able to consolidate them all.
Well, I believe we would, Your Honor, and that's because there's a special venue provision under the FOIA that permits an action to be brought in the District of Columbia, so that under the might-have-been-brought test under 1404A, an action under the FOIA can always be brought in the District of Columbia, so that likelihood makes it much more probable that we will be able to consolidate the cases in a single forum. Now, I do not suggest that it will work in every case. What I do suggest is that if the district courts are told, you've got to try to work this thing out flexibly, instead of just simply saying, you lost to the race to the courthouse and goodbye, because that's all we're talking about. The temporary restraining order here is nothing more than the filing of a complaint and an automatic grant of the temporary. They said, the petitioners say so, and I believe it's page 11 or footnote 11 of their brief. They say it's automatic, and we don't dispute that.
But Mr. It may be the TRO is automatic, but you don't suggest that district judges around the United States, when the government argues there's no legal basis for the submitters to get an injunction, that they automatically enter injunctions right and left, do you?
No, I don't, Your Honor.
I mean, there must at least be a legal basis for the claim.
I agree.
And shouldn't we presume that all judges are equally competent to weigh the merits of these claims? All federal district
that
judges.
That is correct, Your Honor, but we do have a problem of forum shopping, and that is what it is.
Sure.
And the question is, what are we going to do about it? And I don't believe that the principle, which Your Honor
really, if there is a colorable legal basis that persuades a district judge that the document should not be released, they shouldn't be pell-mell released just to pick the forum that the other side wants.
I agree.
Why don't you go to Congress? Congress could stop the forum shopping, couldn't it?
That is, of course, true of everything under the FOIA. I mean, Congress can make any changes it wants. This is a
statute. But the answer is yes. But you'd rather have us to do it.
No, I would. I am here in court
because
now, Your
you
Honor.
Don't have to go all the way up to Delaware.
Or California, as other cases have been involved.
Well, California is involved in this. You just object to taking a trip to Delaware.
And they object to taking a trip to the District of Columbia, with all due respect, Your Honor, because they don't want to be here
but
and we don't want to be up there.
They aren't raising any questions.
Your Honor, this race to the courthouse theory, which has been put forth, is going to produce unnecessary and premature litigation. It's going to produce an unnecessary interruption of the administrative process as parties are racing to the courthouse to get their choice of forum so that everything can be consolidated there because they're going to win. And it provides an absolute choice of forum to one side or the other without regard to the merits. We don't think that's a sensible way of dealing with it. But if that's what the court says, we believe we can live with it in the first case. And we are here today because we agree with the Solicitor General that there is a problem of a judicial administration. We agree that it's desirable to have the proceedings consolidated in one forum. We disagree that the race to the courthouse with one side a guaranteed winner and the other side a guaranteed loser is a sensible way of resolving that conflict. What we urge is that the flexibility entailed in Rule 19 and 1404A be used to solve the problem in virtually every case, and that we don't think that there are significant problems that cannot be worked out through them. Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you have anything further, Mr. Snyderman?
The Marshal tells me I have 3 minutes. Your Honor, first of all, in response to some questions from the justices, I do want to point out that the improperly withheld point was fully briefed in the court below. Those briefs, indeed, are lodged with this court. If there's any question about it, or if it is...
Both times, or first time, or the second time?
It was briefed more sketchily the first time because we're placing greater emphasis on case or controversy.
Yes. Yeah.
But it was there by both the government, incidentally, and by us.
But more fully the second time.
Yes, more fully the second time. And we frankly do not know why the Court of Appeals did not deal with the point at all. Perhaps some of the discussion here today would suggest why the point was not dealt with. I might also add, although it may date me, Justice Rehnquist, when you rely on Walker v. Birmingham, I would also like to say that in our brief we point to the United Mine Workers case, where John L. Lewis made a mistake as to whether an injunction was binding or not, and it cost his union $1 million. And so I would think that injunctions are to be obeyed until such time as they are set aside. We are frankly at a loss, although perhaps it is not important, as to why the government has changed its position on case or controversy. Part of the difficulty that we get in here is because we really did not have a case or controversy in this court. The government now states that there is a case or controversy as to the scope or the effect of the injunction. But I have not heard one word on the part of the government or on the part of the respondents as to what the controversy is about that injunction.
So you say there still isn't one?
There still isn't one. And that's one of the reasons why we're in this bind here, wasting this court's time.
So you say that that's a threshold issue that you urge and that we must decide at the doorstep because that question's always open.
No, Mr. Justice, you need not decide it. If there are three independent bases for deciding it.
We can't decide anything else if we decide there's not a case or controversy. Well,
so don't we have to decide that before we can reach anything else? We just can't assume jurisdiction.
Because that is jurisdictional.
Of course, that's quite acceptable to us.
Well, I mean, isn't that inevitable?
I think we must decide good practice,
as long as you've raised it.
Although this court and other courts upon occasion do avoid the jurisdictional issue. There are, for example, one of our...
Assuming we have jurisdiction and therefore we decide the merits?
Well, this case is now in the United States Supreme Court, and it is still undecided in the district court whether Warwick, one of the 12 manufacturers, was properly served with process.
Right.
That issue has not yet been decided either, which is sometimes considered jurisdictional. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The case is submitted.